discussed the Brahmarpanam verse. That verse talks about how everything in this world can be a yajna. Now, after giving that general principle, Krishna will give specific examples of how yajna can be performed. And he will give about from here 4.25 till 4.29. He gives verses that offer various examples of various kinds of yajna. And after that, he will, from verses 30 to 33, will talk about principles underlying these various activities. So let us look at these various forms of yajna. Daivameva pare yajnam.
Daivameva pare yajnam.
Yogina paryupasate.
Yogina paryupasate.
Brahmagrava pare yajnam.
Brahmagrava pare yajnam.
Yajne naivo pajumati.
Yajne naivo pajumati.
So daivam. Daivam refers to the devatas. Apare, some of them, yajnam. Yoginah paryupasate. So these yogis, they worship the devatas by performing yajnas. So this is the, in the first series in the section, Krishna talks about the literal sacrifice. So in when Nishkam Karma Yoga is being performed, and Karma Kand is performed, that time also yajnas are performed. When Nishkam Karma Yoga is done, that time also yajnas are performed, fire sacrifices. But the motivation is different. The motivation is not just immediate fruits, the motivation is eventual detachment. So, the demigods here are being worshipped not so much just to get material results, but to get elevation. This is not exactly pure devotion, but it is not entirely materialistic worship also. Because if the Nishkam Karma Yogi has not yet come to understand that there is an eternal supreme being. See, there is evolution in one's sadhya, evolution in one's understanding of one's sadhya and one's sadhana. Spiritual advancement means that we have to get to understand the correct sadhya and sadhana. So, spiritual evolution. Now, I am using this in a different sense from the sense in which Prabhupada uses that evolution of the soul through various species. You could call it as more like our conceptual, spiritual evolution of our concepts, of our understandings. So what happens first? We have a particular conception of what is sadhya. And we have a particular conception of what is sadhana. What is the means and what is the ends? So we all have certain conceptions of this. So now, from Karma Kanda, the conception of one sadhya elevates to Karma Yoga. So now in Karma Yoga, it can be Sakam Karma Yoga or it can be Nishkam Karma Yoga. So now here when the yajnas are being performed, this particular seeker is not a Nishkam Karma Yogi. He is a Sakam Karma Yogi, but he is not a Karma Kandi. What is the difference between a Karma Kandi and a Sakam Karma Yogi? That the in Karma Kand, one does the rituals only for the sake of the fruits. There is no conception of any eternal object. But when the yoga process of yoga begins, at that time there is some understanding of eternal objective. But along with that, there is a desire for material enjoyment also. Yeah, I want to be happy in this world also, and after that I can attain eternal happiness, that's also good. I am not ready to give up this world for the sake of the next world. So Nishkam Karma Yoga means one gives up the pleasures of this world so that one can get the next world. So this is how the conception of one's means, sadhya, sadhana, evolves. First, one practices karma kanda, then sakam karma yoga, then nishkam karma yoga. So here, what is sadhana changing? It changes, it grows from temporary to temporary and eternal. And then ultimately it will grow to only eternal. Then within eternal, it will go from Brahman to Bhagavan. This is how the understanding will progress. And here also the evolution will take place. Nishkam Karma Yoga, one may go to Gyan Yoga. We are not right now going into the elaborate yoga ladder that we'll do afterwards. But here, just understanding the progression over here.
KV is Kevala Bhakti. That is pure devotional service.
So roughly this is how the evolution of the sadhana takes place. From Nishkam Karma Yoga, one goes to Jnana Yoga. From Jnana Yoga to Dhyana Yoga. So it's also called as Ashtanga Yoga. Then one moves to Bhakti Yoga. And when one attains the perfection of Bhakti Yoga, that time one attains Kevala Bhakti. One is pure devotee at that time. So, in one sense, both our understanding of our means and our ends, it evolves, it develops. So, initially, if a small child is there, what is his understanding? I want sweet. That is his end. And what does it mean? Cry. As simple as that. I want this sweet, so cry. But then, as he grows up, then his parents tell him that. Now, if you want sweets, you have to go to school, study, get good marks, then I'll give you sweets. And he starts thinking, okay, I study so that I can get sweets. So what has happened? His understanding of the means has evolved, but his understanding of the ends is still the same. But as he studies, as he grows further, he says, yes, sweets, there is no temper. Actually, studies can be for a greater purpose. Now, by studies, I can get marks. And when I get marks, I don't just get sweets. Everybody praises me, everybody congratulates me. So then, his understanding of sadhya grows and studying, not just to get sweets, but to get praises from others. And then he goes further, actually praises are also fine, but then by studies, I can have a bright career. And that career will be a lifelong source of respectability for me, praise for me. So basically, even in our day-to-day life, we will see that in the normal process of biological growth, one's understanding of one's means and one's ends evolves. However, in normal material life, this understanding doesn't evolve to beyond this life. So the Vedic philosophy helps our understanding to evolve beyond this life. So the whole process of spiritual advancement means that our understanding of our means and our ends, it evolves. So here, in the first level which Krishna is talking about is that it is the karma yogi, the sakam karma yogis. So Vishnu Acharya explains how daivam eva pare yajna. So he says, eva over here indicates that they are not yet in knowledge. They perform yajna, but they are not yet completely in knowledge. They are also having material desires. Yogina paripasate. Still, they are not called karmis. They are called yogis. Why? Because they have also developed some understanding of an eternal goal. Yogina paryupasate. So they start worshipping. And now the second Krishna describes is the okay. So now literal sacrifice. Let's see how it is. I'll just put the verse as we go over this, I'll put the verse number over here. 4.25. So worship of devatas, what was talked about is sakam karma yoga. Then offering atma to brahma yoga is also 4.25. This is CD. This is AB. AB means first and second lines of the verse. CD is third and fourth lines of the verse. So what are the next part? Yagye naivo pajuhuvati brahmagna apare yagyam brahma agna. So here the Supreme Brahman is considered to be Agni. And Apare, other people, Vamhagna Apare Yagyam. In Yagya, Upajuhuvati, Juhuvati means to offer. So what do they offer? So this is very interesting considering they offer themselves. Yagya Naiva Upajuhuvati. So they offer themselves. That is the idea of the Jnana Yogis who want to merge the Atma into Brahman. This is the Jnana Yogis. Yagya Naimo Pajuhuvati. By Yagya, what are they trying to do? They are trying to offer their souls into Brahmagna, into the fire of Brahman. So this is what is talked about as Jnana Yoga. Now,
so let's look at the next verse. Achala Prabhupada explained that ultimately all sacrifices are meant for Vishnu, but they may be a transitional stage. Before the people can reach the conception of Vishnu. So next verse now. Shrotradi
Indriyananye. Shrotradi Indriyananye.
Sanyamagni Shujumati.
Sanyamagni Shujumati.
Shabdadi
विषयानन्ये
शब्दादि विषयानन्ये
इन्द्रियाग्निषु जुह्मति
इन्द्रियाग्निषु जुह्मति.
So in these verses, what is the fire and what is the offering, that is changing. So when we say the conception of yajna changes, what does it mean changes? Yajna essentially has two ingredients. There is the fire and there is the offering in the fire. So for the case of Jnana Yogis, the fire is Brahman and the offering in the fire is the Jiva himself, the self. Now here Krishna is telling about something else. He is talking now in this verse, Prabhupada explains about Grahasthas and Brahmacharis. So Shrotradin Vishayananye Sanyama Agni Shujubhavati. This is 4.26 A and B. So Shrotradi Indriyan Anye. So the various senses are there, like the ears, beginning with the ears. Krishna is giving emphasis to the ears over here. And Sanyama Agni Shujubhavati. So in the fire of Sanyam means restraint. So if the senses are offered in the fire of restraint, now Krishna doesn't especially use the word mana over here. But generally speaking, Sanyama refer, like we have Shama and Dama. So Dama refers to sense control. Shama refers to mind control. So Sanyama refers to mind control. So the idea over here is the senses are offered into the mind. That means that the senses want to connect with the external sense objects. But that is not allowed. So that is the sacrifice. You know, we discussed in the Ishopanishad. Prabhupada says, sacrifice means to deny the interest of the senses. Prabhupada used the definition of sacrifice. Sacrifice means to give up what will give us pleasure for a higher purpose. Sacrifice means to give up pleasure for a higher purpose. So the senses, by contact with the sense objects, can give us some pleasure. The eyes, by looking at beautiful forms, the hand, by touching some soft objects, they give us some pleasure. But instead, we draw the senses inwards. So, by this what happens? The senses do not get sense gratification. But by this they get control, they get discipline. So the senses are offered into the mind. That means Krishna is telling over here, and the mind should be controlled, and with the controlled mind, you should offer the senses into it. So, this refers to the brahmacharis, those who have renounced the world and those who do not enjoy this world. That means the senses are there, but they draw the senses inwards. Till now, Krishna has not yet introduced bhakti and himself. That's why he's not talking about focusing the senses on him directly. He will talk about that later. But right now, he's talking about detachment. So, withdraw one's attention. So, this verse is actually similar to 2.58. Yada samharate chayam kurmo angani vasarvasha indriyan indriya thebhyas tasya prajna pratishthita kurmo angani vasarvasha. Just as a tortoise withdraws its limbs inward. So, like this. Now, Krishna continues that correspondence with the ears and he says, first use the word shrotra. Shrotra is the ears. And the object, sense object corresponding with the ears is shabda, sound. So Krishna says, shabdadi vishayan anye indriyagni shujumvati. So this refers to the grahastha brahmacharis. What is the grahastha brahmachari? That's the person who is in the grahastha ashram, but he controls his senses. So 4.26 CD, third and fourth part of this. That means the sense objects are there, but the contact of the sense objects and senses is regulated. It is treated as a sacrifice. And sacrifice is to be performed under regulation. So we have the Garbhadhan Samskar, which is performed by the Grahasthas before they unite for the sake of procreating children. So when the contact of the senses and sense objects is regulated, then that is also considered to be like brahmacharya, because one is living at a spiritual level. The word brahmachari can have a literal meaning and a generic meaning. Literal meaning is that those who are living in the renounced order. But brahmacharya also means brahmacharati. All those who are living at the spiritual platform or are striving to live at the spiritual platform are brahmacharis. So even the grahasthas can be brahmacharis if they are following this. What? Shabdadin vishayananye sai indriyagrishujumvati. That means the various senses, the sense objects here are considered to be the offering. The senses are the fire. So, the sense objects are offered in the senses. But how? In a religious ritual. Not in a whimsical way motivated by the desire to enjoy. So that's how, that is also a sacrifice. Now what does this mean practically for us? Shrotradi indriyanya sayam agmishi juhmati. Actually, the mind is fueled, the mind's imagination is fueled both by our past memories and our present stimuli. The past memories, we can't do much about it. They are there. All that we can do is to avoid recollecting and retrieving them now. They will gradually go away into the they will just disappear into oblivion over a period of time. But what we need to do is not offer further fuel for the imagination of the mind. That means that we don't let the senses hover on the sense objects and offer that to the mind. So instead of the senses giving the food of sense objects to the mind, the senses are withdrawn inwards. And that's how we can stay as unagitated as is possible. That means that the eyes, we don't let them stray in undesirable directions. We don't hear unnecessary prajal, unnecessary subject matters. It's very easy to talk about gossip and hear gossip. But all that happens by hearing gossip is that our spiritual energy gets drained. Because when we hear gossip, then we are using the ears in a way that is not taking us towards Krishna. In fact, that is taking us away from Krishna. Therefore, regulating the senses. Now, after talking about this, Krishna will now talk about the Ashtanga Yogis. Sarvan Indriya Karmani.
Sarvan Indriya Karmani.
Prana Karmani Chapare.
Prana Karmani Chapare.
Atma Sanyama Yoga Agnau.
Atma Sanyama Yoga Agnau.
Juvati Jnana Deepite.
Juvati Jnana Deepite.
So, Jnana Deepite. They are illuminated by knowledge. Jnana Deepite. Does anyone know a famous verse in the Gita where the word Jnana Deepa comes? 10.11. 10.10 is Dadan Buddhi Yogantam, the verse after that. Teshame Vanu Kampartham Ahamajnana Jantamaha Nashayame Atma Bhavastho Jnana Deepe Namasvadaha Jnana Deepe Namasvadaha. I illuminate with knowledge. So there Krishna is telling that I provide the Jnana Deepa by which the devotee gets completely illumined from within. But here, this person, this seeker, is not yet a devotee of Krishna. So, this person has kindled the fire of knowledge himself. So, how it is? Knowledge is the fuel that kindles the fire of yoga. From knowledge comes the desire to practice yoga. So, jnana deepena, jnana deepite. That means, see, when there is fire, we are talking about yajna means what? There has to be fire and there has to be offering. But the fire needs some fuel to be illuminated. So, jnana deepite, by the fuel of jnana, the yoga is illumined, the yoga is motivated. Jnana deepite. So, now this verse, this 27th verse and 29th verse, both seem to talk about Ashtanga Yoga, but 27th verse is talking about the perfection of Ashtanga Yoga, whereas 29th verse is talking about the practice of Ashtanga Yoga. So, restraining the senses and pranas. Sarvan Indriya Karmani, Prana Karmani Chapare. So, here, first, when we control the senses, what is that? Yam, Niyam, Asan, Pranayam, Pratyahar. Pratyahar means shut out all the senses. And then prana is there, the prana karma. So, the activities of the breath, one stops that also. This is a form of liberation that is talked about in the Bhagavatam quite repeatedly. For example, it is described that Yudhishthir as well as several other, even Prithu Maharaj, and they go into meditation or Dhru Maharaj, not exactly. Dhru Maharaj actually is described that he's an external consciousness also, and the external consciousness of Vaikuntha, airplane comes. Who? Dhritarashtra also to some extent. But Dhritarashtra actually, this whole process is not described. What is the process? Basically, Puranjana becomes Vaidharbhi in his next life. No? And who is her husband? So about her husband is described. So what he does, this process is coming. Yudhishthira Maharaj also does the same thing in the first canto. What he does, sit in meditation, and does this 90-90 means, I am not matter, I am not earth, I am not fire, I am not also. But here, that is just to get realization. But to get get elevation directly, what is? You withdraw the earth into the water. The water, then water into the fire. Fire into the air. Air into the ether. Like that, withdraw all the elements backwards. And then ultimately, merge all the elements into Brahman and then take the soul beyond this world. So, Chakravarti Pada explains in his purport that this is a conceptual thing. You cannot literally, in the body, you cannot withdraw the earth inwards. But the idea is that our consciousness is extended into the body and through the body into the external world. So, withdraw the consciousness inwards. As I am not the earth, I am not the body, I am not the earth that makes the body. So, let me withdraw it. I am not this body. I like that, withdraw it inwards. So, actually, our consciousness radiates outwards through the activities of the prana. The air moves outwards. So, prana karmani chapare. So, then what happens? Atma sayama yoga. No. So, here what is the agni? The agni is yoga itself. And juvati. What does the person offer? The person offers himself. Again. So, here atma sayama. So, the acharya described here, word atma refers to the mind. Because Atma as the offering has already been talked about in our earlier verse. And Atma as the mind has been talked about in the previous verse. Atma as the soul was talked in 25. Atma as the mind is talked in 26. So here, that means by controlling the mind, it's offered in the process of yoga. So this is referring to the realized stage of Ashtanga Yoga. Ashtanga, Dhyan Yoga. So, there is no need for us to go too much into the details of this. So, Srila Prabhupada talks about Paragatma and Pratyagatma. You can read that in the purport. Raga means attachment. So, Paraga means Atma has got attachment to worldly things. Pratyagatma means the Atma who has done Pratyahar, who has shut out the external sense objects and he has become detached. So, Paraga and Pratyagatma. So, Atma Sanyama Yoga Agno means that the Atma has practiced, has gone beyond Pratyahara and has become Pratyagatma. So this itself is quite a technical process. Srila Prabhupada describes the five airs over here. I'll just describe them a little bit more in detail as our acharyas have described it here. So we have these five airs. Actually, this whole process of pranayama is quite technical. It's first of all technical to understand and even more difficult to practice. So prana is located in the chest area. It is associated with breathing and speech. Apan is located below the navel and is responsible for excretion and gives energy to the lower organs of the body, including intestines, genitals and anus. So you know, when people have constipation, what Ayurvedic doctors say is that there is not enough vayu in the body to push the excreta out. So that is a function of apan. Then saman is located in the solar plexus. It is responsible for digestion and assimilation of food. You know, in the body there is this peristaltic motion. The body keeps moving inwards, outwards. That's how digestion takes place. So that is done by saman. Then udan controls the head region, swallowing movement of limbs and erect posture. So, udan actually, you know, sometimes if you just sing too much in kirtans, you know what happens? Start getting a chakra sort of thing. That happens because this udan gets disrupted. In fact, if we see now Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he became ecstatic, started crying tears, then what did all the other people around him say? And his ears have got disturbed. Isn't it? The air has got disturbed. And what do you have to do? Say, put some Narayan oil on his head. And by applying the Narayan oil on his head, then he will become peaceful. So, when the udan gets disturbed, then the person starts behaving very unpredictably. And then, vyana is the one air that pervades the whole body. and it causes circulation of blood and coordinates the activities of all the other pranas. So now, we may wonder, what is this whole thing? These are different kinds of airs. What modern biology and Ayurveda are two different models of the human body. And they are models of the same body, but the way of looking is different. Just like if we have a map of India, the map of India, if you look at a physical map, and you look at a political map. On the physical map, you will see, okay, here there is a river, here there is a mountain, here there is a plateau, here there is a plain. But on the political map, you will see, okay, this is the capital city, this is a district, this is a demarcation of the state, this is the area of, say, dispute between two states, whatever. So, although the same country is being seen, the way it is being seen is different. So, that's why there is a substantial difference. So, from the, well, let us say, from the physical map point of view, the whole area may be just one plane. But from the political map point of view, there will be different states in that one plane. So, like that, from the medical point of view, there is one, from the allopathic point of view, there is only one air that goes up and down in the body. That there is one air which you breathe in and it goes all around and comes out. But that is one way of looking at it. Ayurveda offers a different way of looking at the body. And it is just, we breathe in air and we breathe out air, but that air gets distributed in different ways, and in when it gets distributed in different ways, it performs different functions. So of course the prana is not just the air that we breathe. Actually the air that we breathe in and out, that is connected with the prana inside. The air, because the air that we breathe in and breathe out, that is connected with the external atmosphere primarily. Whereas the pranavayu is, the pranavayu refers in a generic way to all the five airs also. And prana is also one of the airs within the five airs. This nomenclature has to be just like sometimes we may use the word mind to refer to the entire subtle body. And sometimes the mind refers to the specific one component within the three components of the subtle body. So like that prana refers sometimes to a specific life air within among the five life airs. But when it is said that Putana's life prana was sucked out by Krishna, that was not one particular, Krishna didn't select one air to suck out. It actually Krishna just sucked out his life air. That means the soul and the body got parted. So there prana refers to the, in a generic way, to all the five life airs together. Okay, so let's move forward now. Dravya yajnas tapo yajna. Yoga yajnas tatha pare. Swadhyaya jnana yajnascha. Yataya samshita vrataha. So in this verse, Krishna gave a general description of various yajnas. Four yajnas he describes. Dravya yajna is, Dravya is what? Wealth, Lakshmi. So, sacrifice of wealth. Tapo yajna, it is sacrifice of austerities. And that is, for example, fasting on Ekadashi, or fasting during going to a holy place, or fasting during sacred times. Yoga yajna. So again, practicing yoga. So here, in this verse, Krishna is giving a sort of broad summary description. Some other people. And Swadhyaya Jnana Yajnascha. This Swadhyaya Jnana Yajna is slightly different from Jnana Yoga. Swadhyaya Jnana Yajna refers to the study of scriptures. Whereas Jnana Yoga refers to intellectual processing and speculation. There's two slightly different things. Although both involve the intellect, the process and the focus is different. The process there is speculation and introspection. Here the process is more of focused scriptural study. And Prabhupada described each of these briefly in his purport. And importantly, samshita vrataha. Samshita vrataha means strict vows. So each of these are practiced very strictly. And all these are forms of yajna. All these are forms by which one becomes purified. So here, Dravya Yajna, Prabhupada talks about social service also. How one can use the wealth to build annashalas, or to build ashram, atithigra, atishalas, anathalayas, and all these annakshetra, dharmashala, all these things. So, Prabhupada gives a description of all that, you can read that afterwards. Now, Krishna will come to two more forms of yajna. Apane juvati pranam.
Apane juvati pranam.
Pranepanam tathapare.
Pranepanam.
कृत्वा
प्राणापानगति कृत्वा
प्राणायाम परायणः
प्राणायाम परायणः
परे नियताहारा
परे नियताहारा
प्राणान् प्राणेषु जोवति
प्राणान् प्राणेषु जोवति.
सो हियर श्री प्रभुपाद कट्स द वर्ड्स इन हाफ इन वन सेंस. सो normally the verse 29 would have ended at pranayama parayana. Srila Prabhupada focuses not so much on the numerical harmony as he focuses on the conceptual coherence. So the description of the various processes of yoga ends with this verse. So Srila Prabhupada is not so much focused on the numerical coordination. This verse should have this meaning. Prabhupada focuses on, okay, this concept is over here, then bring it up. So Prabhupada will do that in the 6th chapter also. In the 1st chapter also he did that once. That's why sometimes in Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is, number of verses is sometimes different from what is given in the Gita press. So when we quote the words, sometimes because Prabhupada cuts the verses earlier, so then it sometimes appears different. But now we will see just two verses later on this. On verse 31st, Prabhupada just used half a verse over it. So it gets compensated. So here no problem comes up. The verses remain the same. Here, this is actually half of a verse. The Prabhupada called it as one verse because it's an independent thought which is there in that verse. So what is Krishna telling over here? So here in 29 ABCD, Krishna is talking about pranayama in the sadhaka stage. So practice of various. This all this was 428. So 429 EF means last part. Apare niyataharah pranan praneshi jhuvati. Niyat ahara. Niyat ahara means regulated eating. So decreasing the eating. That is also one form of sacrifice, one form of yoga. We know that Dhruva Maharaj, when he was in the forest doing tapasya, and he was practically eating leaves and living. So that is also one kind of austerity. Now, what is happening, Krishna says, you take the prana and offer it to apana, and take the apana and offer it to prana. You wonder, what is all this happening over here? How do you offer? Basically, what it simply means is that when one takes one's breath inside, the normal idea is that after I have taken the breath inside, I exhale. But the idea is after we take the breath inside, hold the breath inside. Hold the breath inside. So that's the idea. That's what this whole process is about. I'll just explain this here. Prabhupada talks about this Purak, Rechaka and Kumbhaka in the purport. Yeah. So what is this process? So Purak means we take the breath in and inhalation is prolonged. Slowly take it in. You know, pranayama involves this. Slowly take it in. And then rechaka means the exhalation is prolonged. Slowly breathe the breath out. And kumbhaka means that stop the breath. After inhalation, stop it, or after exhalation, stop it. So these are all exercises of the breath. And these are ways in which the mind can be regulated. Because if you remember, I discussed that the mind is the link between the gross body and the subtle body, and the air is the link between the life air, the prana is the link between the gross body and the subtle body. The mind is the link between the gross body and the soul. Or the subtle body is the link between the gross body and the soul, and subtle body is primarily composed of the mind. And the link between the subtle body and the gross body, or the link between the mind and the gross body, is the prana. The whole purpose over here is to control the mind. So that is one way to do it. So Puraka, Rechaka and Kumbhaka. Puraka means slow inhalation, Rechaka means slow exhalation, and Kumbhaka means cessation of breathing after either inhalation or exhalation. So Krishna will himself tell afterwards, you don't have to do all this, Arjuna, and you also don't have to do all these things. But these are all technical ways. Actually speaking, in the Vedic culture, the process of self-realization is not just an act of simple faith. Just believe that so and so person is your savior and you are saved forever. Just believe this. No. Believing is important, but believing has to be accompanied by a process of transformation. Because if there is no transformation by the belief, what is the use of the belief? So the belief has to. So there is a systematic process of sadhana that is given. This is actually one of the fundamental differences between the Abrahamic religions and the Dharmic religions. In the Abrahamic religions, there is no process of sadhana. Some of them may do some fasting, some of them may go to churches and mosques and temples, and they will do their namaz and their prayers, mass and other prayers like that. That is fine. But that is basically just one small part of, it becomes like a ritual in their lives. There is no systematic, disciplined sadhana that is enshrined in their scripture itself. So there is no process for systematic spiritual elevation. In fact, whatever happens, the nature of the egocentric mind is that whatever is lacking in one's own path, one considers the presence of that in another path to be a fault. So how the Christians try to deal with this is, they say that actually God can be known only by grace. And they say that in the Hindu path, this whole process of sadhana is trying to force your way into the kingdom of God. And this is actually anti-Christian. And there is no concept, they actually criticize the concept of sadhana. Because they say that by sadhana you are trying to force your spiritual advancement. But that is not the right understanding. Because Jesus himself, before he started his ministry, he fasted for 40 days. He went on top of the mountain and fasted for 40 days. And even the Christians acknowledge that the 40-day fasting was what actually enabled him to get the power by which he ministered to all the people whom he met afterwards. So the idea is that even in the Vedic path, there is mercy. So bhakti is primarily the path of mercy. But along with mercy, we have to express our desire for that mercy. So when we are chanting Hare Krishna, it is not that we are trying to conquer Krishna by our chanting. Although, it is the glory of Krishna that he says, Ajita Jitopi Sita Istilokyam, that the unconquerable Lord becomes conquered. But our goal is not to conquer the Lord. Our goal is to serve the Lord. So, yes, Krishna's mercy is there, but we have to endeavor to accept the mercy. And sadhana means we are making an endeavor to reach to God. Although we know that we cannot reach God ourselves, but still we have to endeavor. And there's the example of Prabhupada, the quacking ducks. And Prabhupada saw that a man was feeding the ducks. And the duck that was quacking the loudest, and the man was giving in more crumbs. So now, the quacking has got nothing to do with actually the giving of the crumbs. The man can give the crumbs to whomever he wants. But the quacking is a way of expressing the desire, and the man reciprocated by giving the crumbs. So like that, our sadhana does not produce Krishna's mercy. Our sadhana in and of itself doesn't have to force Krishna to give his mercy. The quacking of the ducks doesn't produce the crumbs over in the hands of the person. But the quacking is one way the duck expresses desire. So our sadhana is like that. But the sadhana is what gradually brings about a sense of discipline and transformation in a seeker's life. So over a period of time, there will be a sudden transformation and realization that will happen when mercy descends. And now we are struggling against our mind and senses. Mind goes here and mind goes there. And say, no, I'll not be doing this. We keep struggling. But over a period of time, by Krishna's grace, sure, there's no pleasure with it. There's no pleasure with it. So, that realization will come over a period of time. But our struggle against this mind and senses shows Krishna that we want that grace. It is not that we are trying to conquer Krishna, but we are showing Krishna that our desire for the grace. So now Krishna will talk about the principle underlying these words, this all yajnas.
Sarve te te yajna vido,
sarve te te yajna vido,
yajna kshamita kalmashah,
yajna kshamita kalmashah.
యజ్ఞశిష్టామృతం భుజో
యాంతి
బ్రహ్మ సనాతనం.
So Krishna is describing over here the three fruits of yajna in this verse. What happens by yajna? Yajna kshapita kalmashah. First thing is that the impurities go away. Then what is the second one? Impurities are removed. Yajna kshapita kalmashah. And yajna shishtamritam bhujo. Enjoys the fruits of yajna even in this world. And lastly is, one attains the supreme Brahman.
So, yanti brahma sanatanam.
So, these three results are described in this particular verse.
Now, in one sense, the first two happen in this world. And we can see this happening in our lives also. The impurities decrease. And actually, when we come to Sattvaguna, there is a different way that we enjoy life in Sattvaguna also. When we have peace, when we have clarity, when we experience serenity, then in Sattvaguna itself there is a certain level of happiness. So actually, if the more we come to Sattvaguna, Brahmacharya life itself becomes a sort of peace and pleasure. There's a certain structure to the life, certain regulation to the life. And that starts giving us a certain sense of wholesomeness, naturalness, joyfulness it comes. So yajna shishtamritam bhujo. And of course, literally enjoy the shishtamritam by taking prasad also. That is also yajna shishtashina santa. You remember the verse 3.30? The same yajna shishta is the remnants of yajna. So here, yajna shishtamritam bhujo. Amrita. So he said that actually this yajna shishta one enjoys in this world, but it is amrita. And what is the result of the amrita? One attains amritatva. One attains immortality. Yanti brahma sanatanam. There are three results. Now, of course, all the yajnas will not give these results immediately. Some yajnas, if one is doing sakam karma yoga, it may take many lifetimes before one comes to the ultimate result. But gradually, all these results will come. Now, this verse describes the fruits of yajna. And Prabhupada has cut the verse because if you look at the thought in this verse, it is distinct from what was being talked about in the previous verse. Aparenyat ahara prana pranashtivati. There is just one type of yajna. Here, from this verse onward, general principles are starting. So now in this verse, Krishna describes the fruits of for those who do yajna. The next verse, Krishna will describe the consequences for those who don't do yajna. So by yajna, one gets happiness in this world as well as the next world. Krishna will tell you, without doing yajna, one will not get happiness either in this world nor in the next world. Nayam lokoste yajnasya.
Nayam lokoste yajnasya.
Bhuto anya guru sattama.
Bhuto anya guru sattama.
So, ayam loko, not even in this world, Arjuna, one will get pleasure. Then, kuto anya. What to speak of the next world? Guru sattama. So Krishna is telling Arjuna over here, if you don't fight, if you don't do yajna or fighting, you will be criticized and minimized in this world also. And you will not even get heaven. You will have to get the consequences there also. So kuto anya. So kuto anya is a, kuto is actually a word which is used in questions. Kaha, kutaha, like that. Kuto anya. So it's a rhetorical question. A rhetorical question is a question in which the answer is already known. But it is a way of expressing. Now, what happiness is there in a body that is a breeding place of unlimited diseases? Pladmayas. So the answer here is, there is no happiness. So it's a rhetorical question, an emphatic way of making the same statement. So, there are many punctuation marks that are there in English. Sanskrit is structured in such a way that all those punctuation marks are not needed. In Sanskrit, you don't need exclamation mark and question mark and semicolon and colon. All those are not needed in Sanskrit. Because the language is structured in such a way that what form is being used becomes clear from the words that are used. So it's a rhetorical question, but you don't need question marks over here. So let's move forward now. So Srila Prabhupada explains that
He's in the cycle in this verse. You know? He says that ignorance is the cause of sinful life, and sinful life drags one on in material existence. And as long as one material exists, one stays in ignorance. So it's a cycle. Ignorance leads to sin, sin leads to material existence, and material existence continues one's ignorance. And let's show this. So when we are in material existence, that itself causes ignorance. And when there is ignorance, there is sinful reactions. And then to bear the sinful reactions, one continues on material existence. And that's how the cycle continues. So what is the breakout from the cycle? That is the performance of yajna. When one performs yajna, then by the performance of yajna, one comes out of ignorance. Because the one gets knowledge by yajna. So Krishna will talk about that knowledge effect in the next verse. The next verses. We'll talk about that. So all of us, when we were living, before we were introduced to Krishna consciousness, we were in material existence and we did not know what is right, what is wrong, what is to be done, what is not to be done. And basically, you know, life in material existence without spiritual knowledge is like living like a person who is blindfolded and is being whipped from all sides. Because he's blindfolded, he not only can't stop the whips, but he doesn't even know from where the next whip is going to come. So like that, adhyatmik, adhibhautik, adhidevik, all the glishas come. So now, when we are get spiritual knowledge, it's not that the whipping stops. Certainly, if we do less sinful activities, the agitation of the mind itself stops, but at least the blindfold is removed. So we know what is happening and we know how to deal with it. So Krishna consciousness gives us knowledge, and then that knowledge helps us to cope with the sinful reactions. And as we exhaust the sinful reaction, then we come out of material existence.
एवं बहुविधा यज्ञाः
विदिता ब्रह्मणो मुखे
कर्मजान् विद्धितान् सर्वान् एवं ज्ञात्वा विमोक्ष्यसे.
So here Krishna is in another principle, ब्रह्मणो मुखे. So here Brahman refers to not Brahmaji nor the Brahma Jyoti, it refers to the Vedas. Remember which verse it referred to Vedas once earlier? In 3.15. What was 3.15? Karma Brahmodbhavam Vidhi, Brahmaksha Sangha. So karma is described about in the Brahma. Brahma is the Vedic literature. So here what is Krishna telling? It's in 3 points in this verse. Bahuvidha yajna. There are many different kinds of yajna. Where do we get the knowledge of the yajnas? Vitata brahmano mukhe. So Vedas have given description for all these different kinds of yajnas. And what is essential for performing all these yajnas? Karmajan vidhitan sarvan. To do all these yajnas, one has to do activity. The thrust of Krishna's arguments is Arjuna, one has to act. So all the yajnas involve action. Karma jan vidhitan sarvan. And one who understands that these are authorized yajnas and they involve action. So when one acts accordingly, evam gyatva, when one acts in that knowledge, mimokshase, one will attain liberation. So the Vedic scriptures give us various pathways of action, and if we know and follow those pathways of action, we will attain liberation. So here Krishna is describing to Arjuna that please do your karma, then you will attain liberation. Now Krishna will talk about in the next verse that, okay, all these yajnas come from the Vedas and all these yajnas will eventually lead to liberation. But performing these yajnas with knowledge is better than performing the yajnas without knowledge. Because the ultimate purpose of yajna is to acquire knowledge. So the more we are progressed on the path of acquiring knowledge, the more we have knowledge, the more we are going closer to the purpose of the yajnas. So let's look at the next verse. That concludes this section.
Shreyan Dravyamaya Yajnan
Shreyan Dravyamaya Yajnan
Jnana Yajna Parantapa
Jnana Yajna Parantapa
Sarvam Karma Khilam Partha
Sarvam Karma Khilam Partha
Jnane Parisamapyate
Jnane Parisamapyate.
So, let's look from bottom.
Sarvam Karma Akhilam Partha. In the end, all karma are meant for what? They attain their perfection in jnana. Till now, Krishna has not yet introduced bhakti to man. So, he's talking at the level of jnana. The purpose of karma is to get jnana. Remember, we discussed earlier how if one is performing detached work, then what will be the motive for work? If I'm working, but I'm not supposed to get the fruits, what is the motive? One grows in knowledge. By doing work in detached mode, one grows in wisdom. It's like if a student is told to study, and he's told, don't bother about the marks while studying. And what is the purpose of study? The purpose of study is to increase one's knowledge. So of course, it is not that the student doesn't care for the marks. Similarly, the karma yogi, it's not that he doesn't care for the fruits. The fruits are a natural offshoot. He's not attached to the fruits. So like that, Krishna is saying, sarvam karma akhilam partha. The purpose of karma is to acquire jnana. Purpose of karma is to acquire jnana. Therefore, among the various kinds of sacrifice that can be performed, one sacrifice can be, one just gives a lot of wealth in charity. That's good. Shreyan, dravi, that is dravi maya yajna. Krishna talked about one of the yajnas is dravi again, 28 words. This shreyan means better than. So better than the dravi maya yajna is what? Jnana yajna parantapa. Jnana yajna is much better. So jnana yajna here refers to yajna performed with jnana. So even in our day-to-day life, we see that if some persons are coming in giving charity, that's good. They are giving charity. Actually, some way they are connecting with Krishna. But if they take books, study books, then when they try to acquire knowledge, then they will grow much more. They will grow much more in their spiritual life. And that's why we will also practically see if somebody says that, I got a job in America where there is no association available, but I can get a lot of money over there and I'll give a lot of charity. Or I will stay here and I'll give a little less charity. I'll give a little small charity. What should I do? Generally, devotees will tell that your consciousness is more important than your charity that you're doing. If somebody is very strongly situated, then the person can do that. But generally, much more important than giving just charity is actually cultivating knowledge. And higher than cultivating knowledge is cultivating devotion. So that's why it is important for even as devotee practitioners that the cultivation of knowledge is more important than just giving charity. See, especially if we go for asking Lakshmi for fundraising, for temple building. You know, many people will give Lakshmi for temple building. But if we tell them, if we start talking about philosophy, say, I don't want to interfere in this. I'll give money because they have a very naive idea. They think that if I give charity of money, I'll get money. But they think, okay, I study this philosophy, what difference is it going to make in my life? They don't think so much that, okay, studying philosophy is also punya. And they have fear that, if I study the philosophy, then I don't know what will happen to me. I will become detached also. So they don't want that. So they feel that, yes, I want punya, so I'll give money. But I don't want knowledge. Krishna said that is not good. Shreyan Dravyamaya Yajna Jnana Yajna Parantapada. Jnana Yajna is much better. Jnane Parisamapyate. So now, at this point, Arjuna has heard so many different kinds of yajna. Apare Niyata, some people do this, some people do that. Arjuna starts thinking, what should I do? And that Krishna will answer in the next verse. Just go to the spiritual master and take knowledge from him. So which form of yajna you should perform? That your spiritual master will tell. Therefore, go to the spiritual master. And in one sense, Arjuna has already done that by coming to Krishna. So in that sense, Krishna is confirming to Arjuna that what you have done is right. So this is how. So Krishna has described various forms of yajna by which one knowledge is acquired. And then he will tell the process of going to the spiritual master and acquiring knowledge. And the next section of this chapter will talk about the glory of transcendental knowledge. Till now, it is talked about how various yajnas lead to knowledge. Next section, we'll talk about
what is the greatness of the knowledge that is required? That we'll discuss in our next class. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Gaur Bhakti Nanda ki jai, Gaur.